Welcome to the CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, CFO of Venice Solutions. We've been doing our series on effective business partnering, and today we're going to be talking about how to partner with the HR organization. I know myself that some of my greatest partnerships have been with this side of the organization. I think we have so many things in common between finance and HR, but we don't always realize it. Sometimes these relationships are smooth, and sometimes they can be a little bit strained. Fortunately, today we have a great guest who's going to be able to share her insights as a leader in HR to help us unpack this topic. Joining us today is a global C-level HR leader who has over 20 years experience as a business-oriented HR partner at leading companies, including eBay, Starbucks, and Splunk. She's also a board member at D2L and Happy Money and advisor to many companies. Joining me is Tracy Edkins. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
You're welcome. It's good to be here, Melissa. Thank you.
Let's jump right into it. What do you think is the role of the HR organization from your perspective?
I think that HR can play various roles depending on the business within which they're working. But I think at the core, HR is largely responsible for hiring and keeping a very skilled, motivated, trained workforce. And they do this through ensuring that they can hire the right people, that they're creating an environment where people can do their best work, where they feel respected, where they feel that they're being invested in and developed, and of course, feel like they're getting all the right rewards for the hard work they're putting in.
When we think about the G&A functions, such as finance and HR, how do you think that we're different from the rest of the organization?
G&A functions are in service too, right? They're in the service. You're either, you're building a product, you're selling a product, or you're being supported to do those things. And so I think really having that customer-centric mindset to the business, to the organization within which people work is really important. But the other thing I think is that the people building the product or selling the product, they have to be so focused on their often in-quarter, in-year delivery. And so I think the functions of G&A also, they have to be able to lift their head up and kind of see around the corner, because their job is to remove barriers to success for the go-to-market and the product organizations in the example I'm using. So I see it as it being different there, in that the G&A group has to constantly be sort of trying to see around the corners and help the product and the go-to-market organizations be prepared for the unknown.
Yeah, I love that. And when I think about how both of our groups sit at this intersection within the business, where, as you mentioned, we can see so many things across the business, I think it's so important for us to together come together on what we see, work closely with our CEO as well, and help to be sharing out some of the things we're seeing that others in the business, we can take for granted that they're seeing them, but they may not be. And so we play a really interesting role that way.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
When I think about the current focus, so many companies are focusing on efficiency. Inevitably, org design becomes such a key part of that. How are you seeing high-performing HR functions partner with finance in terms of how to think about that for the organization?
I think that one of the really powerful tools is for HR and finance to look externally more than maybe they have traditionally. And one thing that I think finance does an excellent job of is really understanding peer data with regards to size and shape of an organization. I think that's helpful to know, okay, companies of our size with our revenue, how are they structured? What percentage of their people are in revenue generating roles versus R&D, et cetera? And then it's really about, you know, leveraging that data to say, okay, how does that apply to us? What's unique about us? Where are we in our life cycle that is going to cause us maybe to veer a little? But it's really helpful to understand that there's an envelope within which we have to work. And then any org design, which, you know, I think I read this at some point in my education, you know, any org design is really just a compromise between the people you have and the work you're trying to get done. And so I think HR and finance have an opportunity to take that envelope, take the reality of their business, and then take that comment of the work we're trying to get done and the people we have, and then your org design can flow from there. And when you can have very honest, transparent conversations about all of those pieces, I think you can do a lot of good for the organization.
And I love how you link that in terms of, because there is really, there's a trade-off being made here, and we're really trying to optimize for maximum effect, both for the employee and the business as we think these things through. And so I do think it's really critical that our two functions work really well hand in hand. Are there any key trends? Because I'm sure you've been involved with lots of org design or org rethinking. Any key trends that you're seeing in terms of where companies are focusing some of the major changes?
Well, I mean, what we've seen recently is, you know, it's all about EBITDA, right? Growth has taken a backseat to that in this current dynamic. So, you know, so efficiency now is top conversation across the board. So we're seeing a lot of that. I think that back to the point you just made, it's not always obvious to people deeper in the organization that there is always constraint. You know, you can have a mindset of abundance, but you're always working within an envelope. So I think in this time of EBITDA being king, communication to employees is really important. And both finance and HR can nail that one together. You know, making sure that people really understand why the constraints are there. I can tell you that earlier in my career, I didn't always get that. And I see from my vantage point now with all the companies that I get the opportunity to work with, the ones who are really having good, open, educational dialogue across the organization are doing a better job of that.
I think that's such great advice, because there really is at the core of that, it's a change management, and you can't underestimate the importance of communication, which is something I'd say that as finance folks is sometimes a little more challenging for us. So I absolutely often lean on HR when we're thinking about how do we collectively make sure that this is going to land, because sometimes things we think or is obvious to us, it doesn't land well on the other side. And so I certainly think we work better together to try and communicate these things and help people really understand the underlying why, because if they do, then I think it definitely at least makes it easier for them to get behind it and move forward with the business. So great advice. Now, do you think that there's a natural tendency within organizations for G&A functions like HR or finance to have to be the heavy in discussions, and when forcing it, any thoughts you've got there about how to do that?
You know, the heavy can be the way it's perceived. I think the way to mitigate the need for them to be the heavy is really through transparency, making sure really at the executive level, everybody is on the same page. And I think by being non-conflict avoidant, right? Because back to the point, if you're not in G&A, you're busy delivering in quarter and you've got a lot of demands on your time. And you don't necessarily want to have to be in a situation where you are bringing up issues with your peers that, you know, are sensitive to you, right? I think back to the point you raised earlier, Melissa, because these functions have such a broad lens, they should play a role of kind of bringing the issues forward, be non-conflict avoidant, put the elephant, or as we say, kind of put the moose on the table. And I think that can eliminate the need for the perception of being the heavy, but they do need to be kind of they have to be responsible for bringing the issues forward and creating safe environments for different solutions to be tabled and, you know, and then help the teams kind of narrow that to a possible solution.
Yeah, I think it definitely, it's a time where it puts those ability to jump into conflicts and have healthy debates and discussions about things. And like you said, not to avoid facing those tough issues, because at the end of the day, that is us not really doing well by our companies when we avoid things that need to be addressed, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I know in finance, we are increasingly feeling the pressure to step it up more and more as a strategic business partner, make sure we're spending more time on value-added insights rather than just compiling the numbers. And I think there's a lot of the same parallels happening for the HR team in terms of needing to be more strategic business partners. From your viewpoint, how has that been panning out? And what are some of the things that you're doing in terms of creating strategic HR organizations?
One thing I did in my last role as an operator that I felt was incredibly beneficial was really being, of course, data, being much more data-driven, really understanding the landscape, both of the organization and what was happening with our competitors in the competitive space, and then bringing that to the planning process. And what I found was very effective in my own strategy was trying to boil down the needs of all of the constituents kind of in a prioritized order, have that be reflected in my strategy, and then go in one-on-one in, with my peers, and sometimes below them as needed, socialize what I felt the 2 to 3 year strategy needed to be for HR and how that was going to benefit them, but also what wasn't going to benefit them. Like to be really transparent to say, I know that you feel you need 1 to 5, but in a constrained environment, here's what I can do. I'm going to do 1 to 3. I mean, I want us to be aligned on the things I can't do. And I want us to agree on why that would be. And that I found was so effective. But a little side note, one of the things when they didn't like that number 4 or number 5 was not going to be addressed in year, they would push back on me and really challenge me as to why. And so I wanted them to understand the choices I was making and what my constraints were. And to the extent, and an example I think you and I talked about once, I had the chief revenue officer and the CTO decide to move some of their budget to my HR budget because they really believed, because I said I could do 4, but I just don't have the funding. And they felt it was so important that they moved money over. And I thought that was a really great example of how strategic planning can be so beneficial to the business.
100%. Because it, at the end of the day, it is about those trade-offs and having those conversations. If they actually are willing to put their money into it, it helps you also know that, hey, this wasn't just a nice to have, it's more in the need to have, and helps make sure that the distribution of where we're putting the investments is really the most impactful things in the org. So love that example that you gave. I think about, you know, in the context of HR and finance, business partnering, and different approaches and structures that we might put in place to make that happen. What have you seen be most successful there?
I have always really enjoyed, and it doesn't have to be dependent on size. I've always really enjoyed where you can have both an HR business partner and a finance analyst focused on the same businesses. And, you know, in a smaller organization, you know, there might be very broad the businesses, but if you can have alignment so that those two individuals can be really useful to that more senior exec on what they're seeing and kind of tag team on seeing around the corners, like we talked about earlier. But the one thing that I learned maybe a little too late in my career is that the caveat is you need to repot your talent. So the larger the organization, the more opportunity you have for this. But I think it's really, really important that you don't leave your finance professional or your HR professional servicing a small, a certain organization or function inside the company for too long. I think people really benefit from the breadth of perspective, and you can have people get, you know, a little biased if you leave them too long. The timing on that really depends. It really depends on the business and what business environment you're operating in. But ideally, you know, I think every 2 years would be ideal. And even if you're in a situation where you're in a small company, and so you, let's say I'm your finance person, you rotate me from go-to-market to say product, and then 2 years where you bring me back, I will be so much better for it. You know, so even if you're cycling people around and they're kind of returning back to home base, it's still so beneficial.
Yeah, it's funny how until you actually sit in another part of the org and see firsthand things that you might have assumed or taken for granted, and then your eyes get very much opened. And so absolutely what you just described is beneficial for finance teams as well. We certainly do try to do rotations because they can serve that part of the next part of the business better by bringing that experience from the other part of the business. And it's interesting as you're mentioning that these rotations, I think sometimes too, when we stagger them, they don't happen simultaneously between finance and HR. It is in fact that other business partner that can help show the ropes to the new person coming in. So be it, you know, HR has a new business partner, the finance person knows what the prior HR business partner needed to know and when they need to bring them in, and they can really help smooth out what otherwise would have been a more difficult transition into that part of the org.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think some of the best are also, you know, that relationship's working really well when, say, my finance person is going to a meeting, they hear something and they know enough about, hey, this matters to the HR business partner who happened to maybe not be able to go to the meeting. In the perfect world, yeah, they're in all the same meetings together. But even when they're not, they're actually listening and minding for one another the things that they know they both need to know.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are any of the best practices that you've seen for successfully integrating HR and finance business partnering into the business?
I think it starts with planning. I think that to the point, so, you know, you and I are already on the same page. And for the listeners here, if you don't yet have a model where you have a finance and an HR professional embedded in the various pillars of your business, I encourage you to, and it needs to be the full life cycle. So it needs to start with the planning process, and the HR business partner needs to know what their role is. You know, they're not just there because they get to attend meetings. You know, they're there to understand the business dynamic. They need to bring their business acumen and really understand the business dynamic of what's happening, understand what is required to deliver on the 2 to 3 year strategy, and know, really importantly, what are the risks to that strategy that might be related to human capital. And then, you know, the finance person is doing the exact same thing. And then the two of them, if they can be so integrated into the business that the two of them take a step back and really think about where is the overlap in their roles and how to mitigate those issues? And where isn't there overlap, but at least shared understanding of what the finance person is worried about? And the finance person should know what the HR person is worried about. And then they can bring that perspective to the senior executive to help them, again, really understand why their plan could be at risk and what the organization from a G&A perspective can do to help them. I think, as I've already said, and hope I'm not being too repetitive, I think in that integration, what's really important is that the HR and finance professionals have an opportunity to take that exec aside and have them think a little bit longer term than maybe the 1 year or the 2 year strategy that's being discussed. It is the trend for all of us now, because the world is changing so fast, to really kind of pull in. You know, there was probably a time, and maybe I'm showing my age here, where, you know, we could look at 4 and 5 year strategies. That doesn't work anymore. But there should still be a point of view of what's on the horizon beyond the extent of the timeline that everybody's working towards.
The CFO Show is brought to you by Vena, the intelligent platform for complete planning. Vena's award-winning platform makes financial and operational planning more efficient, unlocks performance, and increases financial intelligence across the business, so finance teams and business leaders can plan for anything. Learn more at venasolutions.com.
But there should still be a point of view of what's on the horizon beyond the extent of the timeline that everybody's working towards.
Yeah, and I love how, you know, you talked earlier about looking around the corners, and that's exactly where those two are coming together to help with thinking ahead. Hey, the things we're planning to do, this could be what that means 12 months from now, 18 months from now. And I think when done right, you know, those two business partners embedded in the organization in service of, let's say, the R&D organization as an example, they can really become such solid, almost left and right hands for the leader of that organization and their leaders. I find sometimes we almost help in terms of creating the conduit between the leader and their people leaders, because we're able to spend time with all of them and hearing things that they themselves might not even be having a chance to have the conversations. And so we can really help with aligning across functions, but even within function.
I agree 100%. Yeah.
It's all great and well when these relationships are working great and we're bringing each other in when we need to, but that's not always the case. Where have you seen some of the greatest tensions between HR and finance?
Where I have seen tension is where there has been a lack of understanding of the breadth, depth, and complexity of each other's role. And that can come from maybe newness, earliness in career, or maybe a lack of of trust or a lack of assumption of good intent. But if you can really help build the trust, assume good intent, and make sure that people understand the demands on each side, it really can reduce the tension. A big area of tension oftentimes I see is cost, right? Because from an HR perspective, there's all these things that are believed to be true that you need to, that cost money. You know, the things that you feel the human capital, on the human capital side, the things that you feel are required to have a high performing, retained, developing employee base. And the price tag on doing those things is honestly limitless. So, you know, HR has to do their best job possible to prioritize those things and really think about what they're going to do against the strategy. On the other side, you know, it can happen where finance can perceive that HR is just constantly, you know, asking for money and not being very data-driven in the way that they're measuring the dollars they're spending. And that is actually probably true. You know, we've not always had access to the analysis and the data to understand if these investments were paying off. So I think their tension can arise from that, you know, and it's really an unfortunate situation when the finance person has to feel like they are the bank police. And it's a really unfortunate situation when the HR person has to feel like they're the only ones who really care about the employee health, right? So if you get into those two spots, there can be tension. But as you've seen in your career over and over, Melissa, that tension is somewhat false in the sense that it can and should be easily broken down if you've got individuals who are intellectually curious and not conflict avoidant.
Yeah, and I love the way you describe that because that's exactly where I've seen some of the tension arise and leaning in and having that empathy, understanding where one another's coming from. You know, I sometimes come to realize the people team is often hearing all the things from employees and often a lot of the negative things or the requests for improvement. And that can take its toll, I think, on that team if they're the only ones, you know, I'm hearing this, but it's not being heard that, you know, why I think we need to deal with this one or that one. And for finance, because we're a step removed and maybe not hearing as much firsthand from employees about what those things are, why they matter, and knowing that you're actually sifting through a pile that's probably a lot longer and bigger than what we really see being brought forward to us, it creates just these misunderstandings of what we're both dealing with and leaning in and offering support to one another in that, you know, hey, this is tough, limited envelope. And like you said, it could be an unlimited ask that you just can't fund. You know, we can somehow meet in the middle and make sure that we're both finding ways to address the most critical things.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what's one area, if you were to give some recommendations for how finance might be able to do a better job in working with HR, what would that be?
In today's environment, we should assume that the HR counterpart has strong business acumen, but what they don't always have is access, like you just said. So just like the finance business partner might not understand the myriad of demands and lists of things that the HR team feels they're trying to do based on what they believe has to happen, the counter is also true in the sense that HR may not always have access up to now most current analysis of the performance of the business. There may be things they don't know. For example, I mean, I've worked in very large organizations where at the end of the year when the scorecard was delivered, the top execs would not agree on the same scorecard. That suggests that the performance, for example, you know, what everyone's relying on every function to do, there isn't common ground on whether they were all completely, you know, getting at that at a green level, at 100% level. So if you can have that confusion in an organization at the top, you can imagine that you have an HR business partner who may not have the insights that the finance partner might have with regards to the true performance of the group they're supporting. And I think that kind of visibility is so important because I have been in situations where the HR business partner really thought, and again, this happens when you've been aligned to a group maybe too long, but you really think you're the one doing it great. You're doing great. You hear that from all of the leaders that you support, but you could actually be doing a lot of great things, but missing the mark. And there's a gap there. And if the finance team can help to articulate in a data-driven way the true performance of the organization, then HR can regroup and re-strategize on the things that are most important for them to be partnering on.
Yeah, and when you think about it, in most companies, people is one of the biggest things we spend money on. And so not working with our experts on that side in terms of how do we put our heads together to help turn this around is such a missed opportunity, if you ask me.
I agree. Absolutely.
Can you maybe share with us an example of where the relationship that was fostered between HR and finance led to a significantly better outcome for the business?
In one of my last roles, we were experiencing incredible growth in the 30 to sometimes 40% on the revenue side. And, we're probably in a little bit of uncharted territory as a leadership team with regards to what should our headcount growth be in light of that. We never wanted anything we were doing to constrain the business, but we also weren't sure what was the right answer. You know, if you're growing at 37% year over year, what should your employee addition percentage be? And, you can imagine, from a product and go-to-market perspective, they really felt that they needed to get ahead of it even. Thinking about an international expansion, they needed to get their quota carriers hired way in advance of being needed. And so there was this tension. But because of the strong relationship that I had with the CFO, I was able to bring kind of a data-driven perspective on how our quality of hire could be diminished, if we tried to hit these numbers. And I was willing to do it. And I wanted my pride and the pride I had in my team, I wanted the organization to know we could do it. But I wanted them to understand that there could be trade-offs in achieving such a high number. And because I trusted my CFO partner so much, we were able to go deep into the analysis that I had and leverage that together to have a conversation with the leadership team about why we should probably tap the brakes just a little bit with regards to our original growth plans. And unbeknownst to us, that was really, really important because there was an unforeseen situation that we were so happy that we had not delivered to the original hiring plan because it allowed us to stay in control and not get into a situation that no finance or HR person wants to get into where, oh, we've just hired you, we've just trained you. Well, now we need to think about a layoff. And so we avoided that as well through that partnership.
Excellent. What a great example. If you had to think of one thing that maybe finance teams don't know about HR teams and should know, what would that be?
Accept the fact that there can be several truths in one situation, right? When you work in data and numbers, your truth becomes pretty cemented. This is the truth of the situation. And I think, understanding that there could be other truths. I'm not talking about alternative facts, but I'm talking about there can be alternative truths. And to avoid accepting, that there might be some validity to these other perspectives, actually just pushes a rock down the path. It doesn't actually help the teams work together to resolve them. So I think context is really, really key. And having our ears both ways, ears very, very wide open to truly, what's the concern behind the concern? We talk about this in resolving issues. It's probably on the fifth, why is that true for you question that you actually get to the nut of the issue. But those being able to have that dynamic between the two is, I think, very helpful.
Great advice. Thank you so much, Tracy, for sharing your insights and your experience today. Now, whenever we have guests on the show, we do have two rapid fire questions that we like to ask them. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. First one, what is the best piece of leadership or business advice that you've ever received?
I've had the privilege of working with so many great leaders, peers and above me and below me. But one that I think really mattered to me because it was something I needed to hear at that time in my career was to always consider the 1% chance that you are 100% wrong. That has served me well because it's allowed me when I'm so certain of the path and I can get so frustrated that people aren't getting on the bandwagon with me to pause and say, nope, there is a chance that I have this completely wrong. It's a small chance, but I loved how they worded it to me. And I think that was one of the best pieces of leadership advice.
Yeah, I love things like that where it's just short and sweet and sticks with you because you recall that at various times throughout your career and can draw on it. So that's a great piece of advice. What would be the most impactful book that you've ever read?
One book that really stuck with me was in the last probably 5 years was called The Advantage by Patrick Lencioni. And what I loved about that book is every organization struggles with being really, really clear on strategy, understanding when to zig and versus sag, minimizing churn for your employees, and knowing how to hold the leadership accountable for when they're actually the problem.
Which that doesn't happen, does it?
Which is sadly, quite often. And I really loved how that book kind of laid that out because you've got to, we have leaders for a reason. And so it has to start at the top. And then it really talks about at the end of the day, and it kind of comes back to something I said earlier, it really is about being clear on what you're doing, communicating the heck out of it. When you do have to make a change, make sure that's communicated, the why, the how, and what the impact of that is going to be, and then re-communicate again, what you're going after. And that sounds so simple. I think it's actually one of the hardest things to do, especially in a growing and evolving organization. So I love that book for that reason.
I'm going to have to check that one out for sure. So Tracy, one of the topics we haven't yet touched on, but I think is becoming more and more of a strategic imperative is thinking about skills and skills development and some of the skills of the future. I think, and maybe it's because there's so much more talk right now about artificial intelligence and what's it going to mean for the business in the future. What are your thoughts in terms of how forward-looking companies should be thinking about that skills development?
I think that, everyone's talking about AI. And what I feel though is it's not that, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't get a sense that people are scrambling for deep AI technologists. I feel like people should be scrambling for people who understand how to leverage the technology and who can be curious and change willing enough to adapt it in the right way inside their work. And so that, so that really comes down to, are you hiring individuals who have, the emotional intelligence, the curiosity, the flexibility, and the kind of innovative, open to innovation mindset, I think is really critical.
Tracy, thank you so much for joining me today. I know myself along the way, I have learned so much from you, have so much respect for your leadership and your experiences and that you've shared them with me. And I thank you for sharing them today with our audience. Really great insights here today.
Well, the feeling is mutual, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
And if you'd like to learn more about today's episode, please visit the links in the show notes. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to or watch your podcast because you don't want to miss an episode. And if you liked what you heard today, please leave us a review on any of the streaming platforms. We would love to hear from you and it helps other listeners to find the show. For the CFO Show, I'm your host, Melissa Howitson. Until next time.